Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, April 24th, and we're back after a beautiful weekend here in L.A.
Yes.
And did you take advantage of any beach weather?
No.
No, you
we
did
went
not.
To a beer garden yesterday and had some wiener schnitzels and things.
Wow.
And some beer and sat in the sun.
What's a wiener schnitzel?
I don't know. Something with schnitzel, something breaded.
Okay, so I know what a schnitzel is, but what's a wiener schnitzel?
I don't know. I think I might have put them together the wrong way.
Yeah, you did. So you had schnitzels.
And no, I had the wieners.
Oh, you had the wieners.
Yeah, my friend had the schnitzels. Yeah,
I see.
I had a...
So you had both the wieners
and the schnitzels.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a wiener schnitzel. It's like also a type of dog, it sounds like. Wiener schnitzel.
Yeah, it was also a chain of food, a fast food.
Oh, that's why I'm
that's
thinking
why
it.
Okay. Came from wiener schnitzel.
Okay, anyway, it was delicious. And great beer, good beer, good sun, good friends.
So it was like a garden, so it was outdoors.
Yeah, beautiful.
Ah,
yes.
Nice. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we do have a special guest in the studio. We're going to talk about something very relevant and interesting at this time of the year as people plan for their kids. And we'll bring him in just a second. There's just a couple of things I wanted to cover. They have a little meme here on CNN, which they often don't, but it's called the two word phrases Trump uses the most.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's not all two words, but pretty close. One is a lot of money. Okay. Another one's the incredible men and women. We're going to take care of. And finally,
you'll see.
Believe me,
or you'll see. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny. What's happened is he had an interview with the AP last night. And in the middle of it, he stopped to ask the AP reporter, a woman, about if she wants a soda. And she kept being like, no, I just want to get back to the interview. And he's like, a Coke, anything? And she's like, no. Anyway, he repeated himself so much and was so unintelligible that the people who had to do the closed captioning said they had to write unintelligible over and over and over again. So that was live on HuffPo and CNN was the closed captioning person reported. I couldn't understand anything he was saying.
Wow.
So they just had mumbling in parentheses or unintelligible. I mean, that's...
Are you serious?
Yeah, this was last night, breaking noise. Yeah, president. Okay. So Obama was on today live. He's on right now.
Yeah, he's back on the scene.
And I'm like, someone can finish a sentence. So exciting. But I was listening to it on the way here, and he's just meeting with some Chicago community organizers to talk about like low voter turnout and all that stuff. And someone said, yeah, in eighth grade, you were running for your first for office for the first time. And he just stopped it and was like, I am old. So, but it was so nice to just hear at least some intelligent communication.
Well, yeah, someone you like is back on the scene. Yeah, you enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. It's the difference between someone who can really, you know, eloquently speak and not. Yeah. It's just so, they couldn't be more different.
Look, there's a big contrast between the two presidents. There's no doubt about it, you know?
It was very funny.
Day and night.
Yeah, day and night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, he always does a lot of this. My husband and I were talking about on the way here. He's always like, believe me, let's see. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And he and I both wish some reporter would just say, you always say that. What? Give me more detail. Or this is the constant thing. You steamroll the interview by saying, we'll see. I don't want to see. Can you give me a straight answer? Right. But no reporters sort of do that. And I wish they would. Apparently, they studied his language, and he uses about the amount of vernacular of a six-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
It sure does.
You know,
I'm going to be the best.
We're going to
be the best.
I cringed.
Yeah, you're
some
nasty. Yeah, yeah. So, oh, a lot of debates were bad. Remember that when he just creeped up on her?
Right.
I was like, what's you doing?
Yeah,
psycho, just sit down. So remember when Al Gore did that to George W. Bush and Bush was like, hello? Don't creep up on people during debates. Anyway, he has a very low level of verbiage. It's not like an eloquent speaker at all is at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, America, this is the best we could have done. 350 million people. This is our leader. What can I say? Well, you know?
Well, that's next time we want to vote more, I think.
Yeah,
only
we do.
46.9% And they, voted.
But the amazing thing is everybody had something to say about the elections. People were involved.
Very much so. But that doesn't mean people go and vote.
Right.
It's so
right?
sad. Especially the youth. It's
it
really
seemed
bad.
Like a lot of people. It seemed like there was a big turnout where I went. I mean, there were like huge lines and everything.
Well, yeah, you were probably in a really civically oriented. It was on the news, but in the middle of the country or some places that there's no way that they're going to go vote.
Yeah.
They don't think they have a voice.
Yeah, I know.
So that's it.
Well, yeah. But they do have a voice because of the Electoral College.
Exactly. Right? And also, this is what Obama was talking about, is how do we get more young people? Young people, well, he said, will change everything.
Right.
It's going to be a whole other thing. But how do we get them into the polling? That was his main conversation.
Yeah. So
how come so many, a third of you voted during midterms, a half of you voted during presidential?
Right.
Why?
Right.
What's the divide between waiting in line and talking endlessly about it for the next 4 years? You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. I agree, you know?
And like what you said is making it a national holiday, making it so you can get off of work. All these things help promote the idea that it's important.
Yeah, for sure, you know? And maybe talk to them, not at them, you know, with the young people.
Yeah.
And
remember when Bill Clinton did that at MTV for the first time? I studied this a lot in college. And someone was like, do you wear boxers or briefs? And it was really funny because, like, who's going to answer that? And it also turned out he was a real sexual harassment creep. But whatever. Besides that, I remember being like, this is the first time someone's talked to youth instead of at them. He was answering questions.
Right,
it was all youth,
right.
No adults. And I was like, that's what's going to change.
Right, right. And so. And yeah, the new generation is different, you know?
Yeah.
I see some pictures from Coachella. I'm like, oh man, that would have been great to go to.
I see, I love the idea of Coachella, but I'm not a festival girl.
Right. You don't like a lot of people and stuff?
It's just too dirty and like...
Right,
just,
but that's what I'm saying. It's not. Because this is like...
They do have tents
Southern California style,
you're right.
Palm Springs style.
I was going to do it anyway.
They have like lawns and grass and,
I know.
And, you know, and clean bathrooms.
Everyone's
probably
decked out. I know.
Yeah, you know, with the... Yeah, so... I would have loved to go, you know. But
I heard Gaga was great. She stood in for Beyonce, who couldn't go, unfortunately. She was going to be the big finale.
Oh, really?
But she's pregnant with two people
in
her.
So Lady Gaga
finished
was there?
It out and did great, yeah.
Yeah? So the festival's over now, right?
I think so, yeah. Festival season is, I don't know, it's become a whole, like, third, like, another season in L.A.
I know.
It's like winter, spring, summer festival.
It's just that I'm not a big planner. If I was, I'd be going to these things, you know, because you can't buy tickets 2 weeks before.
Right. And I'm like, where do you stay? Like, I'm confused on the whole thing. But it does look cool.
It does, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you can look up everything before you go.
I know.
You know?
But I'm not a planner either. Do I need a flower crown? Like, what do I need? I need what kind of drugs? Like, it seems like a very... It seems cool. I'm not cool enough for Coachella, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not cool enough.
Well, yeah. Maybe we're too old.
I don't know. I think anyone's... I don't know. I once was selling bridal gowns, and some woman came in and bought an Oscar de la Renta, like, $5,000 gown for Coachella to, like, wear.
Really?
I was like, all right. Well, this is not for me.
No, quite not the same.
Not the same.
But it was funny because even Howard Stern commented on this the other day, and he says, we can't even compare this to Woodstock, you know?
Right.
I mean, this is like Hollywood style Woodstock. You
There's
know?
Like costume changes.
It's not about the music. No. It's like all the hot chicks and everything.
It's
He's
just
like,
about the clothing, like the clothing line, the nail polishes,
right.
The hair.
Yeah,
it's
everybody's going to be seen, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the way LA does festivals.
Yeah, that's LA, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Go be seen. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to get to our guest right now and change direction in the conversation a little bit, although we touched on young people, and that's really what we're going to focus on today. We're joined by Billy Downing. You're the CEO of ESM Prep, and you're much more than that. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Thanks, Sam.
Get a little closer to the mic. Thank you for joining us. You were telling me before the show you're from out of town, right? You kind of live here and where else?
Well, I spend most of my time on an airplane, it seems like.
Oh, wow.
You know, seeing all my different clients and our different offices over the United States. But I'm originally from Sacramento, California. My wife and our two kids are up there. And I spend, you know, between 1 and 2 days a week in Southern California visiting with all the high school students here.
Oh, wow.
So I'm down quite a bit, and I'm certainly used to the 405.
Right.
I don't know how you guys deal with
and
it.
And to that flight, huh? The Sacramento to L.A. Although that's not a big deal, right?
Piece of cake.
Yeah, that's going to be easy.
Because do you fly to Burbank?
fly
it's
to
much
Burbank.
Easier,
oh, yeah,
right?
Southwest of Burbank.
Right. And then when you plan ahead, it's like less than $100 each way.
That's right.
Right? I know that because I sometimes go to Sacramento. I go up to a place called, have you heard of a little town called Paradise? It's like about 2 hours sure. north of you.
Yeah, sure. It's north of Chico. My dad's yes. the Toyota dealer in Yuba City, so you pass it on the way up.
Yes, yes.
On the way to Paradise.
There you go, Paradise. Yeah.
Yuba City is not Paradise, but it
no,
is, it's close.
Definitely not. But it was in the news because of the dam, a couple of... what did it call that place?
So the Oroville Dam.
Yeah, the Oroville. Thank right. you, which is right there too. Oh. But Tori doesn't really care. Neither
yes,
does
I
anybody
do. I'm
else.
Very interested.
No, I mean, like who knows about that part of the state? You know, there's nothing
Paradise.
There.
Paradise.
But at any rate, so Sacramento is where you grew up.
That's right.
And what was your childhood like? Do you have any siblings? Big family?
So I'm from a big Greek family, and
oh, wow.
So we grew up in Sacramento. My brothers and sister. As well. And my younger brother is a Navy pilot. My older brother lives here in San Diego, and my sister's in Germany. You know, my mom, when we were applying to college, my mom put up a map, and, you know, she drew a radius of 60 miles around Sacramento, and she said, you guys can go anywhere within this radius. And we like, you know, mom, we really can't get into any of the schools.
Yeah, right?
And she said, you know, that's our problem.
Yeah, right.
We have to figure it out. So, you know, while my siblings have all gone away to other places, you know, me and my wife and our two kids are super happy to be close to grandma and grandpa and
yeah, there you
Sacramento.
Go. People don't understand, you know, only later in life they realize, you know, family is the most important thing because
absolutely.
You can't bring back the time that you mm-hmm. lose not being with them.
Very
you
true.
Know? I had a big argument with my aunt because her kids are like, two of the three kids are already here in the United States. She's got three grandchildren already. And she's like, look, I have a life in Israel. I'm not going to come here. I'm like, you watch how eventually you'll end up here.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think you're going to be able to stay away from your kids, mm-hmm. you know? But all I'm saying is when she finally decides to do this, all the kids will be big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you will have missed out on everything. No grandparents, no nothing. I don't agree. I think one thing I've learned in my life is Spend as much time with the family as you can. Of course, the family that you love, not the relatives that you can't stand, you know? But this is cool. So a Greek family, you guys, you see, my dad is from Greece also, but he immigrated to Israel when he was a year old. So he doesn't remember any of that. He doesn't speak Greek. But we grew up on that culture
mm-hmm.
because my grandparents grew up, you know, lived there, grew up there. So the music, the food, you know, the
oh,
language, sometimes I grew up with that. I was surrounded with that. So I love Greek culture, you know,
nice.
The food, everything, you know, so the food, and the food. Greeks have amazing food. So this is cool. So what school did you end up going to then in that area?
So I ended up playing soccer at UC Berkeley.
Nice.
And then did my master's work at the University of San Francisco. And so I was really lucky that I was able to kind of stay within the zone that my mom
yeah,
told me
absolutely,
to stay
within. Right? I mean, driving distance, easily.
Oh, well, you know, I was home every weekend because, you know, my mom would cook for us
yeah.
and do our cleaning. So it was like stay in the dorms or go home to
exactly
to
it's worth the drive,
yeah.
right?
So we were there quite a bit, and I would bring my friends home, and you know, if you ever meet her, you know, she's probably a lot like your grandmother was in Greece. She's,
really, huh?
She's you know, we just got done having Greek Easter.
Yeah.
And she literally started cooking 2 weeks before.
Oh, wow. My God.
And then, you know, after the whole event's over, you know, it's this, I'm never going to do this again.
Yeah. Right.
I hate having all these and you know. And
but they love it.
Oh, she
they
loves it because this morning she called me and she said, okay, well, when are we all having dinner again?
Yeah, right. That's funny, you know, like my big fat Greek wedding.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, it's like so typical, you know.
I love that movie.
That's why it got so popular.
That's my life. That's,
yeah. Yeah,
that's
really.
Actually not an exaggeration. That actually
that's what
is
they said.
True.
People who are wow. Greek, my Greek friends, were like, that is not an exaggeration.
That's actually how it is.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, are you first generation Greek American, or were your parents born here?
So my mom was born in a small village called Farakalada, which is about 50 people. In the southern part of Greece.
50 people in the village.
Total people. You know,
whoa.
My mom's house, which is still there, was born in the, you know, was built in the early 1800s.
Wow.
And my uncle still lives in that house today.
Whoa.
She came to the United States when she was 16 years old. She put herself through school. She learned the language on her own. She cleaned houses and cut hair.
Wow.
And eventually built a business in the hair salon business. And got married to my dad, who she went to buy a car from. And my dad, being the clever man that he was, sold a car to her and got her on a date.
Whoa.
And
did that all happen in Greece?
No, that all happened up in Sacramento. So when she
So how did she end up in Sacramento?
So she had a an aunt who had moved to the United States earlier and was living in Sacramento. And my mom said, you know, I don't have any money. I can't speak the language, but I want to leave the village and come to California. And they took her in and... you know, that was that. So she.
What a great story. And how old was she?
So my mom's 70 years old. She just turned
70. No, I didn't mean
that.
Oh, now.
She was 16 when she came.
16. Wow. So it's a similar story as mine.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And she's 70 now?
70 now, going strong.
Wow.
That's amazing.
She called me on the way to the airport this morning to make sure that I check the pilot to make sure he's sober and awake.
Yeah, right? Oh, my God. You know, but I mean, I'll never forget the flight from Burbank to Sacramento, my last one, because I told Tori I had taken an edible and I got so scared. I looked at people that fly, like people like you, like that fly all the time. I'm like, how can they possibly do this? I get like this anxiety, and I never had that before. But so I thought, I'm never going to fly again. As long as I can help it. I thought even when I come back from paradise, I'm going to drive the 10 hours. I'm not flying back. But
some people are happier with that.
Right. But yeah. When I came back, it wasn't quite the same effect when I hadn't eaten the edible.
or get rid of the edible.
Yeah, I was able to handle it just fine. But no, so you don't have a problem living on planes and stuff like that?
Well, you know,
how many flights do you think you do every well, it's I travel, two a week, right?
I travel easily 250 days out of the year.
Wow.
So, you know, the tough part is being away from my wife, who I love very much, and our two little kids. Uh-huh. But, you know, when you're building a business, especially in the education sector, which is really hot right now, and there are so many families and so many kids that have questions around the college process, it's, you know, it's very difficult to not get on that plane and go to Portland or go to Dallas or go to San Diego or go to New York. And so I spend most of my time, you know, meeting with families and doing different presentations for our corporate partners. So, you know, that part is challenging. You know, I hate traveling.
You do.
But I really enjoy the people.
But he does it because he has to. Yeah,
yeah, and I enjoy the people. So, right. You know, I feel really blessed over the last 10 years that I've been doing this full time that I've really met some, you know, great families and some really interesting characters and worked with, you know, over 1,000 students.
Wow. And that's so amazing, because you're doing something that not only a business, but it's, you know, you're helping people, you know, and that's a thing.
Yeah. So the way it was referred to me was a double bottom goal line. And basically, you know, you want to build a successful business and be profitable, but you also want to serve a social mission. So when we started the idea around how we could help kids, we sort of thought, you know, where are people really confused and frustrated and agonizing over the process with their kids? And it's actually kind of funny. You know, people get so ramped up about the college process. Where's your kid going to college? And what's the right fit? And how do you get in and do all these things? And, you know, employers that we work for have told us that they believe that the productivity of their employees drastically goes down when they have a son or daughter going through the college application process, because they are so focused. I have this one mom up.
They're like distracted and stuff, right?
I have one mom up in the Bay Area this year. She's a CEO of a big company, and I am convinced that she had three of her analysts working full time with their student to, you know, get all the stuff done.
Whoa.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the reality is, you know, if we can provide a service that people are happy with and get a lot of value at, in terms of, you know, that phone call when the kid's at college and they say, "Hey Billy, I'm at UCLA, I'm at USC, I'm at University of San Diego, and this is absolutely the best fit for me and I'm so happy." You know, I was on a call last night with a family in Venezuela, and the daughter made her decision to go to UCLA, and you could just sense the relief in the family. Everybody was like, all these years of hard work, all these years of struggling, and then the opportunity to get into a place like UCLA. I mean, it really was like hitting the lottery for this
young lady. That's true, for the whole family, right? Because they all invested in this.
Absolutely.
Wow. So this is cool. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Billy Downing, CEO of ESM Prep, and we're going to talk about what ESM Prep is about. But we're already talking about what it is that you're involved with. You also wrote a book. We'll talk about that. So this is very interesting. So we'll get a little bit into the details of getting to college and things like that. What would you say, I mean, sort of like set the tone for this, what would you think, would you say is the biggest challenge for people getting into college today?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, I think right now there essentially are two, you know, big areas to focus on that a lot of people kind of miss out on. And one is sort of realizing, you know, and Tori, I don't know if when you were going to school, everybody sort of tells their kids, be well-rounded. We want you to be well-rounded. And I say it to my two little kids, hey, I want you to be well-rounded. They kind of look at me like I'm crazy. You know, the reality is that today colleges are not looking for well-rounded
kids. They're looking for specificity.
They are looking for well-rounded classes. And so to Tori's point, they are really looking for kids who have a developed passion or interest in something. So I'm looking for the chemistry nerd or the jock.
Or the lacrosse player.
Or the business entrepreneur.
Or the tech girl, like the coding girl or something.
100%. You know, especially girls in STEM now is very hot because it's rare. And so sort of if I'm a female interested in STEM who wants to create an app, who wants to get into the STEM career, you know, that's a way of distinguishing myself as an applicant. Because, I mean, think about it this way. Let's just take UCLA for a second. Right. You know, UCLA had over 120,000 applications. It was the most applied to school in the world.
Wow.
Not in the country, in the world. Whoa. Okay.
And why is that?
It's good weather and visibility, right? It's a great school.
Yeah, and clearly the traffic, the easy traffic patterns are great. No, I think the reality is that the UCs, despite all the negative press they've received over the years, you know, they're fighting a $1 billion deficit and, you know, the increase in tuition, cut in student services, all these sort of negative things have really hit the last 6 years. But the reality is that a UC education is still one of the best places in the world. So, you know, when you look at Berkeley, when you look at UCLA, you talk about paradise, what about UC Davis?
Yeah, right.
You know, my kids in the Bay Area, when I say to them, hey, why don't you consider UC Davis? It's actually a pretty phenomenal school and a great environment. And the kids will say to me, like, is that place that we stopped to get gas on the way to Tahoe? Is there actually a school there? And I'm like, yeah, guys. Like, and it's really interesting. You know, you guys were talking a little bit about the middle part of the country. Us West Coast kids, you know, it's like things happen, you know, oh, I'm interested in SoCal, maybe Northern California. And then it's like the world disappears in the middle part of the country. And then it comes about in New York or Boston.
East Coast, exactly.
And it's like, well, why wouldn't you look in Chicago? Why wouldn't you look in the Midwest? And
I went to Michigan. It was like crazy that I did that because I'm from the East Coast. Right? Everyone's like, Michigan?
Right.
What the fuck? I mean, what?
and families, you know, they sort of think about the process and they go, well, there's no great schools there. Well, wait, there's 4,000 tremendous four-year universities. And in the media, we probably talk about 100 of them. And then the second big issue that I think people kind of miss in this process is that it is really about fit. It is not about brand.
Yeah.
Harvard's a great school. Stanford's a great school. Yale's a great school. But maybe it is not a great school for your kid.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
What happened to me. I went through depression. Mine was the worst decision I ever made in my life was going to that school.
You see, going to an Ivy school, I don't know that I would have fit there because at least at the time when I went to college, they were looking for like really like corporate type people, you know, like people that would fit in big organizations. And I'm more like entrepreneur, you know. I'm more like, so I wouldn't fit there. In fact, I was going to go for an MBA at UCLA. So I'd gone back to school, you know, got straight A's and everything so I could apply and be accepted, right? The last semester, a whole idea for business came to my mind, but they actually turned me down, you know. So I said, the hell with this, you know. I didn't go. But the problem is that you have to, I understand what you're saying, you know, about the different schools and everything. There's not, just because it's a cool school and it's like a big name, it doesn't mean it's going to be a good fit for you.
If you were applying to school again, Sam, and you came to me and you described that your interest is really in entrepreneurial studies and creating a business, and I'm not that corporate guy, you know, I want to sort of figure out a way how I can create my own path forward. You know, why wouldn't you look at a school like Babson College in Boston, which is the number one entrepreneur school in the country?
Wow, really?
You say that to a lot of families on the West Coast. And Tori, you're from the East Coast, so you know Babson.
I sure do.
People, they go, what?
What's Babson?
I'm not sending my kid. You know, I didn't spend $40,000 a year at Harvard Westlake to send my kid to a school I've never heard of.
That's right.
And, you know, wait, you got to sort of re-educate people and say, wait a second. again, it isn't about the brand, it's about the fit. And, you know, there are a lot of people on the East Coast that, by the way, have never heard of Chapman's Dodge School, right? Mm. Which is now one of the best competing against USC's film school. But again, if you live in Boston or New York or D.C., you probably never heard of Dodge.
That's true, right?
And that's too bad because there are so many great schools in the United States. It just takes the right mentality to think about how you find the right fit.
Yeah, I went to, so I was in D.C. and I didn't get into Yale. I got into Cornell. I got into Rutgers and Vassar and all these awesome schools that would have been more up my alley. Mm-hmm. A small liberal arts, hippy-dippy, supportive group. But what happened? Michigan had that big, cool M. Mm-hmm. And that M was cool. It was a brand. Sure. There was a football team. And the cool kids were going to Michigan. Yep. So I went to Michigan and I went to severe crippling depression.
Right. It wasn't the place for
it. It was
you,
just
Tori,
so wrong. And if I had had, and we had incredible college counselors, but no one was telling me, I'm from DC, we're going to Harvard, Yale, Brown. Those were the places you went, or it was like you dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah. Right.
And so no one said to me, it's the fit, it's not the brand. It was all about, well, your dad went to Yale and then Harvard Law School, you need to go to this and this. Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting because my life would have been drastically different, drastically, if I had made a different choice in college. Sure. And I don't know if it would have been better or worse, but I made the wrong choice. And I wish I had had you
to talk to.
And you know, the reality now is that we have more kids than ever before, you know, transferring after their freshman or sophomore year because they're unhappy. And, you know, on the face of that, you might say, oh, that's not really that significant. But when you look at the fact that tuition has outpaced any commodity over the last 15 years, it's risen about 1,200%.
Oh my God.
Higher ed is sort of like, we talk about the credit bubble and the housing bubble. Forget about all of those. The higher ed bubble is real. And it'll be very interesting over the next decade to see what happens. But, you know, when you're paying $62,000, $63,000, $64,000 a year, and now you have to transfer.
Yeah, it's even more.
You're talking about serious investment, and that's a costly mistake, not in just terms of money, but also in terms of time.
And also in terms of, like, my relationship with my family got bad. Yep. I wasn't telling them how bad it was getting. My health went down. And it's weird because they set you up to go to college, but they didn't set you up to go to college. Because I had no clue what
prep.
I was doing.
No prep.
Yeah.
And that's why we
no
have
idea.
Places like ESM Prep, which is the company of Billy Downing, to whom we're speaking, and this man obviously knows his stuff. How did you get into this?
Well, good question.
Yeah. we only ask good questions.
You know, people always say, how did you get started, or how did you become an expert? You know, did you work at an admissions office? And you know, the truth is, I fell into this. I was going to Cal. My dad's a Toyota dealer. I sort of grew up. I'm going to be in the car business. and I got to a point where I realized in college and sort of right after college that wasn't sort of a right fit for me. So, you know, I did what all good Greek boys do in Sacramento. I went into real estate and I sort of realized that wasn't my fit. And, you know, I was really lucky along the way that I had people who were mentoring me and coaching me and sort of, you know, as I was working with their students, sort of like, I was like doing test prep and I was helping them get recruited for soccer. You know, I was just trying to make a little bit extra money.
Right.
And, you know, one of the dads basically pulled me aside one day and said, you know, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, you're not even good at real estate. You're not that smart. You know, you don't even know how to finance these deals, but you're great with kids and you're really knowledgeable about the college process. Why don't you do this?
Wow.
And I sort of went to my mom and dad and kind of pitched them on this idea. And, you know, my mom and dad are both super supportive, but also very pragmatic in terms of, you know, thoughtfulness, you know, sort of looked at me and said, you know, Bill, you have made a lot of mistakes in your life, and this might be the biggest one.
Oh, my God.
And, you know,
what a thing to say to
you. Yeah, what do you do then?
Well, but then, you know, then it was sort of like, okay, fine, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to prove you wrong. But, you know, seriously, you know, I fell into this. I had a knack for working with kids and coaching kids. And I enjoyed it so much. And I sort of realized over time that there was a business that could be built around that coaching model and that mentorship model. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, you fast forward now 10 or so years, we've got 185 employees in 31 cities across the U.S. and the U.K. And what that tells me is not, hey, you built some great business. What it tells me is there's tremendous need out there for families to get information and for families to have someone along the way to coach their kids.
Yeah, my parents, and I know this, I know we grew up luckily with some money, but I know people that didn't, and they still would have paid good money to have someone at least help them, because it was like going into a carnivorous forest, and you didn't know who was good and who was bad, and if it, someone had been coaching, it would have been a lot easier.
So, Billy, tell me something. I mean, I'm starting to think about this. You're like flying to see clients and stuff. Does it, is this very pricey to hire someone like you?
You know, it depends. The industry has really grown over the last 10 years. So as a as an industry, independent college counseling and test prep, you know, sort of was, oh, hey, we don't really need people like that, to being like almost, you know,
like a necessity.
Yeah, it's a necessity for a lot of families. That's not a necessity for everyone. And that's the first thing I tell most people. Like all industries, there is a huge range, right? You can find people who will do college counseling and they'll charge you $100 an hour. You can find college counselors that'll charge you $40,000.
Jesus.
Wow.
So
yeah, it depends,
right? It's a big range on the type of person that you hire and the, whether you're hiring an individual or a company. But I would, you know, I would sort of look at it like this. Let's say, so Tori, throw out a private school that if you had kids one day and you wanted them to go to school, what could be a private school that you might want to send?
Let's just, I love GDS, my school in DC.
Okay. So, you know, let's say that the cost of going there annually is $30,000, $35,000 a year.
Probably a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just being conservatively. So, you know, you're going to spend $100,000, you know, paying for that tuition just to get ready to go to college.
Wow.
And, wouldn't you spend $10,000 to make sure you do it right?
Mm-hmm. That's I mean, true. I would. You know what? It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance.
And if you can just tell one story of the person who didn't have a coach and went wrong, and it ruined so much, like, I would have done a heartbeat. Yeah.
And that being said, I do fundamentally think that people should hire someone if they think that person can bring value and would be a good sort of
fit.
Mentor in the family, and fit is a great way of putting it.
Right.
I don't think you hire someone because you think person X is going to get you into school Y.
Yeah. Right.
That's not what this process
That's
is.
That's not what it's about,
it's
right?
It's really more about, I mean, listen, we have a coach when we go to the gym. We have a coach who helps us with
we
our
have a life coach just we to have deal a life, with
yeah,
anything.
We have a coach who helps us with our taxes.
You're absolutely right. You know, and that's the thing. It's not an ongoing expense. I mean, once it's done, it's done. They move on.
Yeah.
They figure that's part of going to college.
Yeah, but the
that's
amount of,
part of the expense
like,
of
the
going.
Amount of therapy I had to go into after college was so much.
Wow.
Because of my depression, I bet I could have just spent it on a building.
And not only that, but you know specifically what it takes to get into some schools, right?
Sure.
I mean, because you know what they're looking for.
I mean, I think the advantage, you know, with lots of stuff when you're thinking about a specialized consultancy is you've been there and you've done that. I've had kids get into Stanford. I've had kids get into UCLA. I've had kids get rejected at those schools. And so I think, like in any industry, you're looking for someone who has experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what folks are paying for, is the experience and the fit. I like that a lot, Tori. Because I'll be really honest with you. You know, you can go out and get the biggest brand name college counselor or whoever, but is that person going to be in your home at 11 o'clock at night helping your kid write the essay the night before it's due or whatever? You know, that's sort of an extreme, but that's the difference, right? You really want someone who's going to be along for the ride, not just someone who's like, hey, listen, I'm really qualified and here's my suggestions. You want somebody who's going to build a relationship with your son or daughter.
Right.
That's very true.
Wow.
What
like you, a good friend, you know?
Yeah, and like, what are some questions that you ask about when you're like, okay, let's say I had come to you and I've come from this very independent, hippy-dippy, progressive private school, and I was a theater person, okay?
Sure.
What would be a question you have asked me about going to college?
Well, I think first I'd want to understand where theater plays a role in it. Is it something you want to major in? Is it something you want to be a part of? And then I'd probably want to understand, you know, what were the things that you liked and disliked about high school?
I see.
And then I'd want to try and figure out, okay, let's come up with a list of schools. So, like, if you just explain that to me, just what you have, you know, why the heck would you look at a large public institution like Michigan with 40,000 kids? Now, that being said, there are a lot of kids in high school who go to smaller private day schools. I mean, there's plenty here in LA, and those kids want
the
big.
To go. That's
they
what I
want,
thought, right?
You know, they want to get out of it. And what you've got to do is you've got to sit down with them and you got to ask the tough questions and say, you may want the bigger social experience, the football games, the fraternities, the sororities, but is that the right fit for you academically? When I got to Cal, I was the most happiest I'd ever been in my life.
Really?
Because I was at the top of the lecture hall, surrounded by all these smart kids, and there was never a chance that the professor was ever going
to call on you.
And I could hide. I spent 4 years hiding. Because I knew that I was in a massive, you know, there's 100 kids, 200 kids, 300
kids
in every class.
Wow.
And I didn't want to be, because in high school, it was the opposite. I was in an all-boys prep school in Sacramento, and they always called. And, it, you know, he, the one teacher, he would always call on me. Father Witten, I remember him like it was yesterday. He would always call on me on the day that I didn't do the reading. And I was like, you know, how does he know?
Because they know in your face.
They
but
know.
Your body language, you're probably fidgeting. You're trying to hide, you know?
And I'll tell you, for me, it was between two schools. It was between going to Cal and going to Claremont McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to go to Claremont because I liked soccer coach. I said, hey, it's D3 soccer. It's a little bit less competitive. I could probably play more. This could be a great experience for me. And I went down and I visited, had a great experience, and sat in on one of the classes. And there's like 8 kids.
Yeah.
And all of them are brilliant. And they all did the reading. And they're having this dialogue. And I called my parents on the way home. I said, well, I just saved you guys $25,000 a year because I'm not going here because I would never make it. And so, but Tori, back to your point, it takes a long time to build the relationship, to be able to figure out what's the right fit. And,
right.
and you only get to know that when you understand the dynamic of the student, the dynamic
the
of
person.
The family.
Because if you had talked to me, here's the other thing. I went to Michigan and there's a total with grad students, 150,000. Mm-hmm. And everyone joins a sorority fraternity. But I was too proud. And so if you had heard that I was going to go to Michigan and not join a sorority, you would have been like, run away.
Crazy,
and I
right?
had no one telling me that was a bad idea.
You were totally a bad fit.
I was a
with
terrible fit. And not to join. Yeah. And I thought I was so cool and not to join. But that would have been at least some kind of a community.
Right,
so you
right.
would have told me red flags, red flags,
well, you
red
want,
flags.
Well, anytime you go to a big school, your goal should be to find the small pockets that make it a small school. Right.
I did not do that.
And you know, Michigan, you can have a small liberal arts college experience at Michigan if you know how to approach it.
Right. Yeah.
And
I went into the residential college thinking that's what it was, but it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, Sam, I think the big issue now is, you know, as you look at LA and you see all these tremendous schools, the Harvard Westlakes, the Chadwicks, the Brentwood, whatever, you name them. And then you start looking at the applicants, right? And great grades, great test scores.
They're all the same people, aren't they?
And you know, and I'll tell you this, Tori's onto something. You know, all the extracurriculars look the same and the volunteer work looks the same. Uh-huh. Guys, I'm 100% convinced there is a town in Mexico that is fantastically amazing and been built all by kids from LA, because every LA kid I ever meet, I say, well, so what are you doing for community service?
Oh, they go to Mexico.
I'm going to Mexico to build homes. And I'm like, where is this city?
Because
somewhere there is a city that these kids
have built. It's
gorgeous. And it is a resort town that nobody knows about, but it's the best place to do community service, apparently. And so, you know, if I'm a college admissions officer from school XYZ, right, and I'm sitting down and I'm looking these up, because, you know, they read regionally. So, you know, if I am the West Coast SoCal region rep for Michigan or whatever, I know the schools. I know sort of the programs. So I'm going to read contextually in the region. Like, a kid in L.A. is not going to be read, you know, versus a kid in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
There's
right.
totally different markets, totally different experiences. But, you know, when I start seeing, okay, you got good grades. Okay, good. You got good test scores. Great. You got the same, you know, BS activities that everybody else has. And the other issue is, you know, I read some of these resumes and I'm like, man, this kid is impressive. He's all like in 10 clubs. And then I ask him, I was like, so you're in 10 clubs. That's really, really awesome. He was like, yeah, I don't go to any of the clubs. I just signed
list
up. I signed it up at club day. So I'm in the clubs. So the questions that I'm asking myself is, you know, what have you done at your school that's really made you a leader? What have you done in your school that truly differentiates you and distinguishes you?
Right.
And, you know, you can be in a lot of clubs, but I'd actually rather you not be in a lot of clubs, be in
one club
and be the president or be the founder.
Right.
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 And so.
And that's what, you know, this is a totally business marketing approach to college. You know, I mean, the thing is, rather than be a small fish in a big pond, be the big fish in a small pond and dominate that area, you know. And that's exactly what you're talking about. But and Tori was saying, specializing, you know, being focused. I totally see this. And now, in addition to this, you guys have like test preparation and everything. I mean, this is like unbelievable. So you've covered every angle of this. I mean, I need someone like you around me 24 hours a day.
Me too.
But let me ask you this. I mean, since you're already here and stuff, let me ask you a couple things that probably a lot of people are wondering. One thing is this. You're saying Don't look for the brand name colleges, right? The question is, though, people are spending so much money on those, believing that because it's a brand name, we have a better chance at a high-paying career. So what's the, I mean, what's a person to do if you tell them, okay, go to the, some school they never heard of, but they're saying, but nobody's going to hire me because nobody's heard of that school, as opposed to Yale or
But
Stanford.
No one ever asked. I feel like when I went on interviews, I was not asked a lot about my college experience.
Yeah, but I think in those industries, if you in some industries you do, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
So it's a very valid question, Sam. You know, I think a couple things to think about. One is, you know, you might get into a really great school like UCLA or Cal or Davis or, you know, name the school, Michigan. And the reality is there are so many kids at some of those schools that even if you are really good, you know, you're going to finish in the middle. Right, you're going to finish in the middle because there are just so much, you know, so many kids, so much competition,
right. And so many bright kids too.
And so is finishing in the middle of the pack really as rewarding as kind of finishing towards the top of the pack? And you know, maybe that's a hard question to ask an 18-year-old. And again, fair point. But I think the other issue is this: the reality is there are very specialized schools that are tremendous in one particular thing or another. So if I'm an engineer and I want to study chemical engineering, you know, there's 15 colleges in the United States that are really good at chemical engineering. One of them isn't Yale. Mm-hmm, one of them isn't Harvard, right?
Yeah, so, there you go. You know, okay, so it makes sense again.
Penn State is a really good
so you
know, chemical
engineering. So you've got to align your goals with what the school can provide.
Yeah, I never even thought about that.
Right, and people don't think about
that.
You know, so they go and they waste their money and their effort, and they probably lose a lot of self-esteem when they get rejected and don't get accepted.
Well, and also you got to think about the student for a second, okay? You know, and just back up to your question, you know, first and foremost, in the book, I spend a lot of time talking about this sort of notion, which is, what have we told kids for generations? Work hard in school, you'll get good grades. Mm-hmm. If you get good grades, you'll get into a good college. If you get into a good college, you're going to get a good job. And if you have a good job, you're going to have a good life. And the reality is that linear story isn't really happening anymore, because you could get perfect grades, perfect test scores, and still not get a great job.
I got perfect scores and I still didn't.
Right. So think about it this way, Sam. If I'm a student here in LA and I'm doing well, but I'm not a 4.0 and I have a learning difference. I have ADHD, I have processing issues. I have to work extra hard to get the grades that I'm getting, and I'm competing, right? And somebody like me walks in and says, you know what? You need to think about going to college somewhere where your learning differences, where they get it, mm-hmm. where they know how to address it, right? So that you're in a school of people who, you know, sort of understand you. And I say, why don't you look at a school like Colorado College? The initial reaction I would get from a mom and dad down here is, are you on drugs?
Right.
we're not sending our kid to Colorado. Where is Colorado College?
Right.
Is it in Denver? No, it's actually not. You know, but when you dig a little deeper, and you see, wow, you only take one class at a time, 3.5 weeks, 3.5 weeks, the block schedule. It's built for really smart, really engaging kids who, by the way, have LD issues. And by the way, you know, everybody sort of makes this thing about, oh, LD means you're not smart. Look at the Fortune 100.
They all have them.
Half of the CEOs in the Fortune 100 all have ADHD or have some type of documented learning difference. Learning differences doesn't mean not smart. It means that I process things in a different way. Mm. And generally, highly intellectual people have LD issues.
You have that. Wow.
So my point there is, we have got to get to a place around college admissions where we are thinking about, what is best for my kid?
Mm-hmm.
What are the majors, the programs, the you know, the industries?
Even the weather surrounding the school is important. No one thought about that.
Wi-Fi,
to ask me.
Food. I swear to God,
I had
a family driving home from San Diego. They had just viewed schools in San Diego. They just looked at University of San Diego, which, by the way, is a phenomenal school. And I said, "What did you like most about University of San Diego?" And the student said, "The food pavilion." And I said, "Really? That's like that was a big deal." And she went on to explain why.
Wow.
And you know what?
It was important.
It made total sense.
Yeah, right.
And I was so proud of her in that moment, because she was thinking about the things that were important to her.
Exactly.
Not the important things to anybody else. So what was going to lead to her have a high quality of life?
That's so
and
true.
And you know what? We forget about that a lot.
That's true.
You know, kids go to New York and they visit and they go on vacation. They stay at the Waldorf Astoria and they walk around Central Park and they're like, I'm going to college in New York. This is the greatest place. And then they go to college in New York and they go, wait a second, this isn't
horrible.
This isn't what I thought it was.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I think it just, you hit it at the beginning, Sam. People are so focused on brand because they think that brand equates success.
Right.
You know, there was a really interesting podcast the other day. It was the guy who started Power Rangers. And, you know, he said that money.
Chaim Saban?
Yep. And okay. He said, you know, money is a marker for success, but it's not the only marker. And it kind of goes the same in college. A brand is a marker towards, you know, the really great environment in school, but it's not the only thing.
Right.
Right. Brand isn't the only thing that makes a school great. And I'll tell you what.
And that's what you're here to tell. I mean, and that's amazing, you know. I mean, it's just like unbelievable the amount of information you have. I mean, you're so intimately familiar with the entire college process, the college life, you know. I mean, I'm fascinated, you know. And so you wrote a book. Tell us a little bit about the book. What's the title?
So the title is College Greatness: A Family's Guide to the Admissions Process. And so I started it about 2 years ago. My really good friend and business partner, Joe Jezuski, who's been my best friend since first grade, who's been with me since we started the company, came to me one day and said, hey, I think you should write a book. And I said, I think you're crazy. Like, do you know my schedule and my ADHD? Like, do you really think that I could write a book? He goes, no, I think that if I help you, we could do it together.
Right.
And, we started kicking it around and, you know, we started talking. And the one thing that was very apparent was that, and you see it in the book, there's four stories about four students. And by the way, you know, everybody who reads the book calls me or emails me and said, are the stories in the book real? And they're 100% real, including the names.
Wow.
So this isn't like stuff that we made up. These are like the first story is about a kid named Tommy Schultz, who is from Yuba City, California.
Tommy Schultz, is that from Styx? From the group Styx?
No.
Okay.
Not the same
one. Right,
and Tori will appreciate this. Tommy grew up in an ag community in outside Sacramento. His dream was to go to Georgetown.
Nice.
And he wanted to be in public service. Got into Georgetown. And then was at Georgetown visiting on admit weekend, and he was sold. He's like, I want to be in D.C. I want to be in public service. This has got to be the best place for me. And then he got the email from Stanford saying he was accepted to Stanford. They literally got on the plane that day, came to Palo Alto, visited, and signed up.
Wow.
And the purpose of that story is that here's a kid who grew up on a kiwi farm in Yuba City, California, who everybody told him, you can never get into Stanford. You're never going to get in, Tommy. You're great, but you're not good enough. And he went to Stanford, graduated in 4 years, and then went back and worked in Washington, D.C., and now is doing a bunch of advocacy in the state of Tennessee. So the stories are real. And so as we were thinking about the book and thinking about the stories, we realized that the most important thing that we could share with families about the process wasn't like, do this or do that, right? There's lots of books like that.
Yeah, there's so many.
And you know, there's people who are a lot smarter than me who have written those books already. So we sort of said, why don't we tell the stories of some of our kids and some of our families and see what lessons families can glean from that experience?
Yeah.
And so the response from the book's been tremendous, and
we're
really blessed. And, you know, I think we end up giving away more books than we sell, although, you know, every time I want to give a book away, my office says, what are you doing? You know, you're supposed to sell those.
Exactly.
But, you know, the best part about it is getting the phone calls from people who said, hey, I read your book and this really helped us in the process. Thank you.
Right.
That to me is worth
right.
the time.
Right. And besides, you know, having the book is like, I mean, this is like, a guide to admissions process. And I insist again, this is like a one in a lifetime thing. You don't want to screw it up.
I don't,
you know?
I know my parents, at the same time, my parents sent my sister to the wrong school. And she ended up leaving. So both kids got the best education, but the one decision we had to make was wrong, both of us. That once in a lifetime choice, we both went the wrong way.
Yeah.
So you're right.
Yeah. I know.
You're right. It's like so important.
He's a matchmaker.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
Yeah,
you match people.
He's a Yenta.
He's a Yenta. That's what he is, you know. Billy Downing, let's talk a couple minutes about ESM because this is an amazing thing. But let me ask you real quick. You know what? I'll ask you after the show about like certain schools and stuff, because people want to know, you know, but we don't have time to go into specific schools. We only have a couple minutes left. ESM prep, ace your exams every time. Test preparation, 98%. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, when we started doing the counseling side of the business, we started to realize that, yeah, helping kids find the right college was a big part of the puzzle. But then we started to realize that there was some holes in test prep and that there was some holes in academic preparation. And our families were coming to us and say, well, do you also help us prepare for the exams? And can you help us get ready for our finals? And can you help us write our essays? And we started to realize that, wow, the potential here was a lot greater than we even thought. And so we started hiring and training and building our own curriculum and developing a method to how we want to do things based on what was successful for us in our respective college. And I'm blessed that I have a tremendous team around me who all had great and unique college experiences, which then they translate to working with their kids. And so, you know, we just started to see that kids need from basically sixth grade through the college process. And, you know, we talk a lot about getting into college and the importance of that. And Tori, you know, you obviously and your sister having gone to a college and then having to leave. I'll tell you a bigger, you're an entrepreneur, Sam.
Right.
A bigger business in helping kids be successful when they're in college.
Yeah, staying in school.
Than just getting there. And I think there's a lot of, there'll be a lot of movement in that sector too. But anyways, we're essentially the all-in-one house type shop. So families come to us for everything.
That's awesome, man. Tutoring, test prep, college counseling. I mean, that's the whole package, you know. Go to esmcollege.com. You're going to find so much stuff on here. Is this how people can get a hold of you?
Or absolutely, yeah.
What about social media? Do you have any?
Yep, we're on Facebook and Instagram, and you can just Google ESM Prep or ESM College, and we'll come up, and happy to help anybody if they have questions.
I wish you had been in my life so badly.
And I'm going to pick your brain after the show a little bit. You owe me a little bit, right?
No problem.
I'm kidding. Anyway, I wish I had somebody like
me
you.
Too.
Around.
Me too.
No problem.
Well, thank goodness for somebody like you, Sam. For future generations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll be hiring it for my kid. That's what I hope.
There you go.
It's true.
Billy Downey, thanks again for joining us. All the best to you. Tori, thank you as always.
Anytime.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.